Thursday Night Thunder.
Love
I'm your host.
Radio.
I hate that intro. Hello and welcome to the December 18th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and tonight we are proud to welcome Jeremy Mayfield back to the Thunderdome, as well as the author of What Did Jesus Drive, as well as whatever else pops into the conversation. We are joined once again by Circle Track racer Michael Mullally, who will be helping out with questions, as well as her own unique perspective on racing from a driver's point of view. How's your sprint car preparations going for next season?
Well, it's going pretty good. I think we're all just kind of waiting for the season now.
When does your season start out there?
It usually starts towards the beginning of April.
Yeah. Our first guest of the evening is Jason Vines, author of the book What Did Jesus Drive? Crisis PR in Cars, Computers, and Christianity. Isn't it time that we are told the insider truth regarding the internet, the intentional and unintentional cover-ups made by the big boys in Detroit?
An industry, the auto industry, driven by profits over principle, according to many of its critics. Be prepared to buckle up and enjoy this ride. This book is the first Tell It Like It Is of its kind. This book has already been endorsed by Lee LaCocca, AutoWeek publisher Dutch Mandel, Joe Trippi, Democratic Campaign, and media consultant and doctor Ricardo Martinez, and the former administrator of the National Highway Safety Administration, to list a few.
Looks like he might be on the line. So let's see.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be on your program.
It's great to have you on this evening. First off, how long were you involved in the auto industry?
Oh, I've been a part of it for almost 30 years. Started in 1983. And still consider myself in the industry somewhat, consulting to a couple of companies. So it's been a wonderful ride in a wonderful industry.
Who's your biggest client?
I can't tell you. I hate to say that, but I can't tell you. I have a non-disclosure, and so I can't tell you. But and I know it sounds a little shaky, but that's the way it works sometimes behind the scenes.
Yeah, as we've all seen with the recent Sony thing, it appears that there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that nobody really knows about, and I'm sure that your book gets into some of that. What do you think people will learn by reading this book?
We need to tell the truth, and we're having a harder and harder time doing that in this country, around the world, but especially in this country. And I found that if you told the truth in a crisis, you usually survived it. And if you don't tell the truth, it usually kills you. And we're seeing that today, whether it's Takata airbags or GM ignition switches. When you hide the truth, you're going to pay a lot of money, you're going to kill a lot of people, and it's not going to be good.
I know in the press release it mentioned a little bit about the Volt and the issues they may or may not have had with that. What sort of information does your book reveal about that?
That was a phony crisis created by the United States government. They crash tested a Volt, crash tested it, turned it on its side several times like it was on a barbecue, and then when nothing happened, put it in a holding yard, and 3 weeks later the fuel source started on fire. Well, that happens. And so they created this controversy, and then they crash-tested 3-volt batteries by themselves. Not inside vehicles, but just batteries by themselves. And on the third attempt, they got one to spark, and suddenly there was a crisis. And by the way, I thought General Motors handled it wonderfully, especially for the customer.
Who's the most colorful person you've ever met in the auto industry?
Oh, that's without question, Lee Iacocca. He changed the industry. He saved Chrysler. Father of the Mustang, father of the minivan. actually saved thousands of dealers and their livelihoods and communities, and I was very proud to bring him back to Chrysler to do an ad in 2005 with Snoop Dogg. So he was by far the most colorful, maybe the smartest guy I ever worked with.
I do a little bit of coverage now and again about the Barrett-Jackson auto auctions. How do you feel those have helped or hurt the auto industry as a whole?
Oh, those are spectacular because they're just people that love cars. And there's a lot of haters out there of the auto industry. So when you have a place where people love to be around cars and love to spend a lot of money for them, that's all good. So I'm not a huge fan of going to them and not putting my own money down, but I think they're a vital part of the industry and the allure of the industry.
How do you feel that auto racing helps in the appeal for the American auto industry in particular?
It gets people excited about cars. We actually learn through technology as they're trying to gain the efficiency of the internal combustion engine, which they're trying to at every second of a NASCAR, of an Indy race, or whatever. They're trying to just squeeze this because all the cars are, quote, the same. So they're trying to squeeze the technology out. And if that can be transformed into a regular consumer's car, it's all a good thing. And, by the way, it's entertaining, too.
Is your book more for industry insiders, or is it meant for the general public as well?
I hope that it's meant for the general public because telling the truth is not just an auto industry thing we need to do. We're seeing a lot of lies right now in the IRS and the NFL and the NCAA. And my book kind of sets out that here's what you have to do when you're getting into a crisis. And the first thing is tell the truth. And if you tell the truth, you'll probably come out on the other side fairly positively. But if you decide that you want to lie or obfuscate or you just want to hide stuff, you'll probably get screwed. Bottom line, to be as crude as I can.
My co-host has a couple of questions for you.
Hello.
Hi. First of all, how long did it take you to write this book?
I started writing it 2.5 years ago. I put an outline together in about a weekend, and actually the book took me about 3.5 weeks to write. But then it took me about 5 weeks to research to make sure that every date was correct, every quote was correct, because I knew that it would be controversial, and I didn't need to get tripped up. So, you hear my little Sammy there. So I started in earnest in March and ended it in August, and we went to the printer in September. And so it's been on the bookstore since November, and online on Amazon since November 1. So it actually, once you get down to the writing, it goes pretty fast if you have an outline and you know the facts.
How long did it take you to come up with the general idea of this book?
That was actually fairly quick because I knew from the start I wanted to give people an idea of in the public relations world, if you decide that you want to lie, you'll probably really screw up your company. And if your company decides to lie, and it's kind of been one of the tenets I've been a part of in my career, is to tell the truth right from the start, even when it's brutally honest. So the premise of the book was pretty easy to write. The outline of the book was pretty easy to write. It was getting the facts down. That was actually the most fun part of it, and writing it. And yeah, I've been very blessed that the reviews on Amazon and other places have said it's a page turner. And they say, well, it's a book mostly about the auto industry. It's not about the industry. It's about telling the truth. And it's something I've lived by. I haven't always been perfect. But we see that today where so many organizations have a hard time telling the truth. And I hope that's why this book resonates. I'm starting to go out on college visits and lecturing, and it's kind of exciting right now.
So other than finding the facts, what was your favorite part about writing it? Was it being able to just, I don't know how to explain that, but more or less, what was your favorite part about telling a story?
Well, you just said it. It was telling the story. My favorite part was I was up in northern Michigan when I finished it, and I was just exhausted because I had spent, like, sometimes 20 hours a day writing it. And when I knew I was done, I was excited about it. And then I had a wonderful editor who just absolutely got involved in the book and made it better. And so when I knew I was done, you know, the first book is in your life is hard to write. And when you're severely ADHD like I am, it's incredibly hard. But it was exciting to get it done. And then to see the reviews, I'm very, I cherish the reviews for the most part of people that have loved the book already. And we're just in the early stages of launching it. And people are saying this is so much more than an auto book. This is a book about communicating, about the way you should act in a crisis, and that's why I wrote it.
Do you see yourself writing any other books?
Yeah, I've got a couple already in the works. I want to focus on this one for now. But, you know, I talked to other authors. I said, how difficult was it for you to write your first book? And they said, it's excruciating. I go, good, then I'm not alone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pain in the butt. But it's done. We're going to the second reprinting. Actually, the second printing happened this afternoon, where we got to fix a couple typos, and which made me good because people pointed them out. And so we have the second printing coming out. We'll hit the stands in the first week of January, and the college lecture tour starts, and so I'm excited about that.
What advice would you give to someone looking to write a book?
Put your notes down, get it ready, and then you have to dig in. You just can't do it, okay, I'm going to write 2 pages today. And I learned this from other friends, Bill Vlasic from the New York Times and other people, saying you have to get involved and you have to just nail it. You can't do it a page at a time. You really can't do it a chapter at a time. You have to do it in swaths. And so, you know, I've got, I think, 35 chapters, and I would go 4 chapters at a time because they all went chronologically with my career. And so you have to dedicate yourself. You can't do this, you know, one cheek off in a seat. You have to go out and do it. Otherwise, you'll be disjointed, and it'll make no sense, and your editors will look at this and go, what is this book about? Because I can't figure it out. You have to have a little bit of a stream of thought.
Was this book, like, a huge challenge for you, or was it fairly simple after you had the general idea and layout and everything?
Once I got going, it was very easy. But as I said before, the toughest part was making sure that I was completely accurate. Dates, quotes, and so forth, because I knew it's a fairly controversial book, and I knew some of the folks that I'm not too pleasant with in the book would challenge me and maybe sue me. But I had to make sure that I had everything locked up factually 100%.
What's the biggest controversy you tackle in the book?
Well, it's what came out in the media, you know, when the book first came out. The fact that my phone was bugged at Ford Motor Company in the waning days of the Jack Nasser era. And after Nasser and I got fired, we were at his condo with several executives and the executive assistants and the security guards. And I said, how long's my phone been bugged, knowing that it had been bugged, in my opinion? And the top security guard said, 2 months. So that was in the book, and of course that made all the news in Detroit, the fact that Ford Motor Company has bugged my book. I know it's salacious. It didn't bother me in the end that much, but it's the most controversial part of the book. I also take on the safety advocates, the so-called safety advocates in the auto industry, Public Citizen and Center for Public Safety or Auto Safety. I think they're frauds. I state it that way in the book. I think they're shills for trial attorneys, and I don't care for them. I think they hurt the buying public because they create hysteria unnecessarily, much like in the Takata thing right now. We don't need a nationwide recall of Takata airbags. We need to focus on where people are in harm's way, and then go to the cold states.
What do you think the best launch of an automobile in the past several years have been, and what's the worst?
What's the best what? Sorry.
The best launch, the best new car, and how it was promoted to the public.
Wow. That's a great question and a tough one. I'm a big fan of Hyundai because this is a company that when they first launched in the early 80s, they completely blew it. And then came back and redid themselves. Big fan of Subaru too because they singularly get their brand more than any other company. Not the greatest cars in the world. They're not really environmental, even though they get an environmental sticker.
Mm-hmm.
But they know what their customer is. It's unbelievable. I'm a big fan of Ford Motor Company, not because they have my pension, but they just seem to be getting it right lately. And then, of course, my friends at Chrysler, they seem to be, you know, the Jeep vehicles are just flying off the shelves right now. In fact, I saw a Wrangler $40,000 and I'm just shaking my head. They've done well.
Who do you think hasn't done so well, and why do you think that is?
Well, General Motors has blown it on the ignition switch, which has become one of the biggest disasters in the history of the auto industry. It may even top the Ford Firestone crisis, which I was a part of, because these folk knew they had a problem and hit it. Didn't kill as many people, but it's worse. And the fact that the auto company knew they had a problem. So we'll see where it goes. It's a great industry. I'm proud of it. Proud to be a part of it. But once in a while, a little ugliness and a little bit of bad behavior.
And with that, I think that'll be a good way to end the interview. I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program, and I'd like to invite all my listeners to go out and buy his new book, The What Did Jesus Drive? Crisis PR in Cars, Computers, and Christianity. It's now available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook. Where are you going to be touring? What are the cars?
I go to Rochester, New York next, and then back to Detroit, Cleveland, Lubbock, Texas. And we're just starting the tour, so it's kind of fun. I've never done this, obviously, before, but it's nice to go into universities and talk to the kids and talk to them about the future of, you know, PR and communications and what they may face. So it's exciting. I get to do book signings along the way. So I'm having the time of my life, to be honest, and I hope people go on Amazon and buy my book.
Well, best of luck to you, and thank you very much for coming on the program.
I'm so happy to be on your program. Thank you. See you guys.
Once again, that was Mr. Jason Vines, author of the book, What Did Jesus Drive? Crisis PR in Cars, Computers, and Christianity. We'd like to thank him very much for coming on the show. It was an eye-opening experience, and hopefully you learned a little bit. I'm actually interested in reading the book now. It seems like it could be a good experience, and give us a little bit of insight into how the auto industry works behind closed doors. Our next guest won't be on for about 10 more minutes. Jeremy Mayfield, he's been in news a lot in the past several years. He took some time off. Recently he's come back to racing, and he's doing pretty well. He has a major announcement they made at the Lucas Oil event last week, and we're going to get into that a little bit in about 10 minutes. For those of you who subscribe to SpeedwayDigest.com or read my articles there, I did post another article this afternoon about the Galcon event that was held at Hendrick Motorsports. It gives you a little bit of insight into the reasoning behind the event, a little bit of information from the pit road or the pit crew head guy, a little bit more information about the Alcon company, a little bit more information about their A-team of optometrists. So if you're interested, please go to SpeedwayDigest.com and click on the Racing News section at the bottom of the page, and you'll be able to find a little bit more information about Alcon and about Hendrick Motorsports, and see a picture of me going through some of the testing that they had, the eye testing. Some of it has been featured on the commercial for Hendrick Motorsports, where Casey Kane does that little thing where he chases the object around the screen by not moving his head. That was pretty interesting, and perhaps one day soon we'll all be doing that at the local optometrist office. You never know. It has been a rather slow week in racing. There isn't a lot of racing going on right now. There have been some announcements lately. For the local residents here in Palm Beach County, tomorrow night, Larson Motorsports, who we've had Shay Holbrook on a few weeks ago, she'll be testing at the Palm Beach International Raceway to get her IHRA license. There'll also be other members of Larson Motorsports there, so it'll be a good way to light up your Friday night at the Palm Beach International Raceway by watching jet dragsters run, as well as some people in bracket cars. Should be a good show. The prices are right. They're right at $10 to compete and $20 to run your car down the track if you're interested. So I'd advise you to go out there if you don't have any other exciting Friday night plans. It is the holiday season. There's an awful lot of stuff going on, but especially here in Palm Beach County. But if you're interested in racing and you've got the little racing bug, head out to the Palm Beach International Raceway this Friday night for their testing to them. I'd imagine there's not a lot of racing going on in Washington State this time of year.
No. I think most racing that there was, it actually... Oh! No. The last race that I heard of was called the Pumpkin Smash, and I was in Hermiston. So, no, for the most part, racing here in Washington just comes to a halt, pretty much, kind of sad.
I know here in Florida there has been some testing at Sebring International Raceway, the Extreme Speed Motorsports, so we talked to... Ryan Dial a few weeks ago. They were testing there at Sebring in the new Honda P2 car. It's quite an impressive looking car. I did a little piece on SpeedwayDigest.com about that yesterday, so I invite you to check that out. It's an amazing looking automobile. It will be a little different this year at Daytona to see how the P2s, the P2 coupes. I'm sure there'll still be a few open cockpit P2 cars plus the Daytona prototypes. And I feel that the P2s might have a little bit better advantage at Daytona than they did last season. And it'll be a good race. I'm planning on going to the Roar Before the 24 early next month, January. Seems like the first week after the new year. So I'll probably be up there on Saturday is what it looks like. And I can give you a little bit of a rundown about that when that happens. I'm currently working on getting press credentials for that, but we do... already have tickets for the Rolex 24 at Daytona, so at any rate, we're planning on going up there. I'm also planning on going to the Rolex 24 at Daytona, which is held at the end of January. So it should be a good race. As I said, here in Florida, the racing season never really ends. It is a little quiet now, but it will be warming up in January. There's a lot of testing going on now. There'll be a I just wrote a little bit this afternoon about pro winter warm-up at PBIR, where the NHRA will be here. Now, the second weekend of January, they'll be here for the for a warm-up. They'll also have the jet cars there at that time, which would be a little different to have the IHRA jet cars competing in the same track that the NHRA Top Fuel and Funny Cars are competing at. And it should be a great show, and I'm really looking forward to that. So, racing in Florida in the spring is a really good thing. There's racing from the middle of January all the way through pretty much the beginning of April. There's another race at the end of April. The IHRA will be at Palm Beach International Raceway the last weekend, I believe it's the last weekend, might be second to last weekend of April for the Nitro Jam. So, everybody in Florida will have lots of racing to go to. The month of March is the insane month for racing. There's a race virtually every weekend. Some weekends there's more than one, which doesn't really make sense for the average fan, because you can't be in more than one place at once. But it's a good thing for the state, and it's a good thing for auto racing. Next season is shaping up to be a good year for auto racing, at least on track. It'll be interesting to see how many people actually tune in, how many people attend the races. The race here at PBIR for the Pro Winter Warm-Up was very well attended. The race at St. Petersburg last year was very well attended. We're hoping to be at St. Petersburg for that race as well. The race at Daytona was incredibly well attended, the Rolex 24 at Daytona, both competitor-wise and spectator-wise. So we'll have to see whether the numbers hold up and whether the TV numbers improve at all. That is the big kicker, because TV numbers are the ones that make the drivers the big money, the drivers and the owners, and they attract the sponsors. So, without TV numbers, without people, the sponsors don't appear and the racing pretty much goes away. Who's your favorite team in the Rolex series? Or do you just generally follow the series?
I just generally follow the series. I don't really know that much detail, really. I just kind of turn it on and watch the race, kind of. But who's your favorite team?
I'd probably have to go with Extreme Speed Motorsports simply because of the local connection and the fact that when I was probably 15, Scott Sharp was one of the first drivers I actually met and got his autograph at the Palm Beach International Raceway. And he's the sort of guy who doesn't look any different now than he did back then, except from the fact he's not wearing his little visor anymore. But other than that, he's pretty much the same guy as he was in the early 90s, so... I'm also
interested.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask if you've met a lot of professional race car drivers.
Personally, no. I've met them in autograph things and stuff, but I've the only drivers I've actually personally met, I suppose you consider that, was the Mazda Motorsports team last year. We had a really good tour of Mazda Motorsports at the Rolex 24 at Daytona. And I've kept in touch with Tristan Nunez a little bit. He's actually, as you know, he's been on the show numerous times. I'm hoping to have him on again early next year at the same time as the World Before the 24 or possibly right afterwards. So that's one of the few drivers I actually really keep in touch with. Most of the people I keep in touch with are PR people. I've met a couple of the Porsche PR guy is a really good guy. I've met a couple of the Mazda PR people who are really good. They're helpful. They're actually true race fans. So that's a good thing.
That's so pretty cool, though.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody you've met, who is your favorite?
Mm-hmm.
out of everyone you've had the chance to meet, who do you really tend to like more, I guess?
Well, I suppose that the one of the first interviews that I did, live interviews that I did, was with Juan Pablo Montoya, who, when I first got his autograph a couple of years before that, he was the sort of guy who didn't really seem interested in anything, in people around. But when you get to talk to him and get to know him and get to hear his true interest in all forms of motorsports, I think he's a really good guy, and he's probably one of my favorite drivers. We have a couple more minutes until Mayfield's going to call in, so now we're going to take a break for our sponsor.
Get ready to relive the greatest rivalry in drag racing history. It's Don the Snake Prudhomme versus Tom the Mongoose McEwen, facing off in the feature film Snake and Mongoose. The movie stars all your favorite cars from the 60s and 70s and includes some spectacular scenes using vintage footage from the old glory days. Get it now on DVD and Blu-ray or download directly to your electronic device. Available in stores, Redbox, at Amazon.com, or online at snakeandmongoosemovie.com/store.
Our next guest of the evening is Jeremy Mayfield, who is making his second trip into the Thunderdome. Mayfield has recently competed in the Coma Unwind Modified Madness Series, as well as doing some late model dirt racing. He's on the line now, so we'd like to welcome him to the program.
Hey, yeah, Jeremy. Glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me on. How you guys doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good deal.
For those who don't remember, remind us how you first got your start in racing.
I started off in a little town of Owensboro, Kentucky, racing go-karts, and just started out as a dream and just kept working my way up and, went through the ranks and moved to Nashville, Tennessee, when I was around 19, something like that, and started working, driving for Sadler Brothers Trucking and just kept going up the ladder. They had a race team there, and that's probably my biggest break I had was with them, and then just moved right up into the ARCA series and then the Cup series.
I know this season you've competed on both dirt and pavement. Which is your favorite form and why?
I like the dirt tracks, but I like pavement too. I've run a lot of pavement races over the years, and I've run a lot of dirt races over the years. But dirt racing just seems to be really, as far as short track racing goes and Saturday night racing and stuff like that, it seems to be the way to go. I mean, there's a lot of fans, a lot of support. Just the car counts are great every racetrack you go to. And you go to an asphalt race, and it doesn't seem like people are that interested in it anymore. So not sure why that is, but I certainly like dirt racing for the challenge of it too. I mean, it's pretty different way to race, and the guys that run those series really run good, and the competition level is really high. So that's probably my preference right now.
How would you judge your 2014 season as a whole?
probably as a whole, it was fair. I mean, a year ago we were sitting here with nothing, and we put a lot together and done a lot over the past year. We've gotten a pretty good little team built up here now, and we got our modified stuff runs really good, for the Coma series, and I've had a lot of fun doing that, and we got our dirt car programs about getting ready to take off the ground here and get rolling for next year. And so I mean, we made huge gains. It just we didn't race as much as we wanted to, but hopefully next year we'll be able to do that. And now that we got our stuff built up, and feel like we're better prepared now. So it was a building year. It was definitely we started from nothing, and we've got something now to work with, and we feel like that. We understand what it's going to take to be competitive now, and we feel like that we're heading in the right direction, so that's all you can ask for.
I know last week you attended the Lucas Oil Banquet and made some announcements about your plans. What are your plans for 2015?
Well, we're still trying to get everything finalized right now. We're looking for sponsorship money. Obviously, it takes a lot of money to run the Lucas Oil Series, and we certainly want to run all the races, and we'd love to be able to to run the whole series, but to do that, it just takes it takes a lot of money to do that, and that's what we're trying to put together now is put together a few more partners with us that may be able to able to help us as far as resources go and allow us to do that. But we're going to continue working that way no matter what. And worst case scenario, we'll run you know, like we plan to do this year. And that was the, you know, a lot of the big races and several Lucas Oil races if we don't run them all. But we're certainly hoping for the shot to be able to get somebody to come in and work with us and be a partner of ours and move forward and have the same goals that we have in racing and try to do the whole thing.
What's your favorite track to attend a race at?
To attend a race? I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I like a lot of different places. I don't really have a favorite really of anything. You know, just, you know, I enjoy racing and enjoy dirt racing and all that stuff, and they're all pretty good. I mean, every dirt race you go to is always great, and so I don't really have a preference other than to kind of like them all, you know.
What's your opinion about the recent removal of grandstand seats at the NASCAR tracks such as Daytona, Atlanta, and Charlotte?
Well, I'm not sure about that either. You know, I heard about it, and it's a pretty sad situation. You know, when you start taking seats out so that you can say that your races are, you know, sold out or whatever, that's pretty embarrassing, I think. And, you know, right now I'm not sure where the state of NASCAR is. You know, just I haven't really kept up with it like I used to, obviously. And, you know, I know that just every year it seems like something else comes up and it goes down a little bit further. So now taking seats out of racetracks, I'm just not sure why you would do that other than say that they're full. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, I noticed that the fan base and the crowds at the racetrack are not, you know, nearly what they were in the past. And certainly seems like it's getting worse every year. So I'm not sure where that's headed and why they're doing it. But I'd say it's time for a change, to do something and not change the cars and the rules package. Let's change something else that's leading the sport down the wrong road, you know.
My co-host has a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
Do you see yourself racing NASCAR again anytime soon?
Probably not anytime soon. You know, I love racing. I love racing the NASCAR and I love driving the cup cars more than anything. You know, just you know, I'm not interested in running in the back or just, you know, riding around being a number. So for me to be able to go out and get back, you know, reinstated and be able to get with a good team was probably far from none happening. So I'm not really interested in just riding around and, like I said, just becoming one of the numbers on the racetrack. You know, if I could go back and be in the right situation or decent situation where I could race and be competitive, it's a whole different story then. But just to go back, I don't see myself going back anytime soon.
For you being a race car driver, what is the toughest challenge?
Probably the toughest challenge of being a race car driver would be, you know, learning how to actually driving a race car is really the easiest part of the whole thing. You know, it's the hardest part is you know, getting with the right team, getting the stuff built around you, getting good equipment, you know, looking for sponsors like we are right now, you know, trying to get the money to race off of it. That's the hardest part. If you don't have the money, you don't have somebody backing you. It's real tough to do, you know, be competitive. So there's probably a lot of great race car drivers out there that's been really good drivers that never got a chance to make it or never will make it because they don't have the money behind them. And that's probably the toughest part is getting the right resources around you and the right people so you can run up front and win races.
Do you prefer, like, local track racing, or do you prefer, like, professional racing?
Well, I mean, I like them both. You know, you got to run the local tracks before you can be professional, and you know, that's why I like the Lucas Oil Series. It's a great place to race, and it's professional, and, you know, very competitive, and it's growing leaps and bounds. You know, when you look at their tracks, they're not taking grandstands out, and they're not, you know, changing rules every week and coming up with all these weird cautions, and none of that stuff's going on. It's just good, solid racing, and that's what I like, and that's all you can ask for, and it's, you know, not a lot of politics involved. You don't have to, you know, constantly just worry about the political side of it and all that. You can just go race and be good You don't have to worry about the sanctioning body, you know, changing the rules, like I said, every week on you, and we have to build new cars or new motors and all that stuff. They just go there and race, and you can build your car and run about any dirt track around the country. So that's what's pretty cool about it.
Have you ever flagged a race before?
No, I never had a flagged race. Not sure if I'd be good at it, but who knows?
If you could give advice to an up-and-coming driver, what would it be?
It would probably be learn a lot about the sport. Learn about more. There's more to it than just driving. Like I said, you got to learn how to do the other things, and that's be able to figure out how to get yourself in the right position to be back with a, you know, with a really good team and people behind you, and that'd be my biggest advice. Just trying to figure out, you know, how to get around the right people for you.
We have time for a couple of questions. If anyone would like to call in, please call in now to 215-383-3681. The number again, 215-383-3681. You mentioned in the past that you might be interested in doing some sports car racing. I know in the Rolex 24 Daytona comes up the end of next month. Are you planning on being around there at all?
Probably not. You know, I got hopefully we'll be working on our dirt stuff, and you know, there's a lot of dirt racing starts around that time, but that's always a good time of year, you know, when it starts. And I wouldn't, you know, say I would never drive one of those cars. I wouldn't mind driving one of those. It'd be kind of fun, but, you know, it's just there again. If you don't have the money to go out and buy a ride or figure out, you know, a sponsor behind you, it's hard to do anything. So that's the biggest thing we're working on right now, is trying to figure out how to get enough resources to do what we want to do and do it the way we want to do it, you know. And you know, for somebody to call you up just to drive a race car, that doesn't happen too much anymore, doesn't seem like.
What do you think the best advice you can give somebody in trying to find a sponsor is?
Well, good luck, you know, because it's hard. It's this day and time. You know, a lot of people have already been in and out of sport, and sponsors have come and gone, and it's tough. You know, it's a tough road ahead of them, and you just got to, you know, that's why there's only, you know, I think like, you know, maybe a good 40 or 50 Lucas Oil cars that are really good, you know, that run most of the races, and you only got, you know, 40-something cup cars, and there's not a lot of spots available out here for drivers. So if you're going to be good, you got to come up with a way to find a sponsor that's got enough money to get you there, or at least give you the opportunity, and then that's hard to come by anymore.
What's your opinion of the fact that that Sprint's going to be leaving NASCAR in about 2 years?
I mean, I don't really have an opinion on that. They came in the sport and done a lot of great things, and done a bunch of good stuff for the sport and helped it. And I just think that they see the same thing that you know, the rest of the big, you know, corporate sponsors have seen over the years. It's that it's all about return on your investment, you know, and you know, if they put a dollar in, they need to know how they're going to get that back. And I'm not sure if there's a way you can tell that, or if there's a way that's even possible for that to happen anymore, you know, in the sport. So I think you're going to see a lot of that. Sponsors are definitely leaving. Like I said, they're taking grandstands out of the racetracks. You got, you know, just a lot of stuff that's not looking good. It doesn't, not real positive right now for the sport. So it could be tough on them.
Who's your favorite NASCAR Sprint Cup driver in the series right now? And which Cup driver do you think will be the biggest surprise in 2015?
Yeah, I don't really have any favorite drivers. You know, I just, you know, if you're a driver, you don't have a favorite driver. You know, you just kind of get along with them best you can and stuff like that. And you know, I watch it every once in a while and, you know, and see what's going on. But I don't really keep up with it like I used to. And I'd say probably, you know, one of the gifts cars probably be run, you know, they're always going to run up front. And, I mean, it's going to be one of the, here's how simple it is anymore. It's either a Hendrick car, a gifts car, you know, a Stuart Haas car. You know, there's not a lot of other race teams out there. You know, it's only about three or four teams in Penske, you know, that's going to, you know, be the ones to watch out for. So I'd say out of those 12 cars, one of them won the championship for sure, you know.
That's a pretty good bet. I was actually up at the Hendrick Motorsport Shop about 3 weeks ago now, and that's quite a facility they have there.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, they got it. They're pretty much the team to beat, you know, and they've done it for, you know, quite some time now. And like I said, it'll be out of one of those four owners there that they'll definitely win the championship. You just don't see a lot of other, especially independent teams or smaller teams that's even got a shot anymore the way the rules are and the way the sport's been, you know, transformed in the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years. You know, it's just it's gotten where it's almost like a, you know, IndyCar, Formula One car now. You know, they're already lower down. It's got a lot of technology and a lot of, you know, a lot of engineering that has to take place, and it just costs money to do that. It's just like anything else. You got to have the money to for the resources to be able to run up front and win races.
I think I asked you the last time you were on this program, but if you were the person who was in charge of NASCAR, what changes would you make to make the sport better?
Well, you know, the first thing you got to do, I feel like, is you got to go back in time a little bit. You know, you're getting way ahead of the ballgame here on with your race cars, and I think it's safe to say that over the last 10 years that I don't believe there's one change to the car or a year, the changes they made, you know, at the end of the year, whatever rules change or anything, that's helped the sport. You know, they've not made it, you know, it's boring. You know, I mean, the cars are just riding around following each other. It's not that exciting, so the fans are not going to watch. So you got to figure out what to do to make it more exciting, and I don't think that they can make those decisions from the top. You know, you got to get down with your teams, your owners, and figure out what you got to do to make this stuff better to get back on track. And I think to do that, they're going to stop, reevaluate everything, back up, and whoever's been making the decisions realize that they're going in the wrong direction and start over. You know, and that doesn't mean take horsepower away or cut a spoiler off or all this crap that goes on every single year. You know, that doesn't mean that. That means make a major step in the right direction and go back to what the fans want to see, and that's good, you know, stock car racing, and the fans want to see drivers that they can relate to. You know, they want to be able to, you know, look out there and see a driver running, and that driver have his own personality and his own brand, and you know, just kind of building his own image, and not just all the drivers are kind of just stuck in the same box now, and they all talk the same, act the same, they don't say anything. You know, I mean, it's just, I don't know, I think they got to get away from all that and get back to what got the sport to where it is today, and that's just good, you know, normal people watching the sport. It's not all about Hollywood or corporate America. You know, it is for the sponsors, but sponsors are corporate, but who buys those corporate products? And that's the normal person, the everyday guy and lady and family that goes to races and enjoys it. It's not about, you know, who can spend the most money and who can charge the most to get their best cars and all that stuff. People don't want to hear that. People want to just go back and be normal and watch good old, you know, stock car racing, and that's not what we're seeing anymore.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show and wish you lots of luck next season, and hope you find a really good sponsor to help you out in your dirt racing and your modified career.
Oh, we will. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on. And like I said, hopefully everything will work out for us, and we'll be able to say a lot of good things about us next year.
Thank you very much, and happy holidays to you.
Hey, thank you. You too.
Once again, I'd like to thank Jeremy Mayfield for taking time out of his busy schedule to come on the program. If you're interested, his website is j2mayfield.com. It has all the recent revelations he's had about his past issues and his current plans. So I'd advise you to go and check that out. The website, again, is the letter J, number 2, Mayfield.com. Even though most professional racing won't resume until the end of January, this program is committed to bring you the latest in motorsports, as well as some automotive coverage to fill the long off-season gap. That being said, we will be taking the next couple of weeks off to celebrate the holidays and wish everybody a happy Hanukkah, a Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at radio.speedwaydigest.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at speedwaydigest.com. It looks like we're about ready to wrap up the first year of the Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. Is there anything you'd like to add?
It's been very interesting.
It has been, and I'm looking forward to a much better year next year. We've already got a few surprises up our sleeves. I'm working on a few two-hour specials and some new guests, and it should be a great year. And I wish, as I said, I wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, and a happy holiday season. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you again next year in the Thunderdome.